Fine. This
That's
is
good.
this is the hour each week when we talk about movies and showbiz, and we can get to the Oscar stuff from yesterday in just a few minutes. But first, let's just jump into the movie reviews for this week. What do you got?
Well, I have The Wedding Ringer. I've got two that I saw for this week, but okay. I have The Wedding Ringer.
This is the Kevin Hart movie.
Kevin Hart and, oh gosh, Josh Gad.
Mm-hmm.
Your kids will know him as the voice of Olaf. You may know him. Probably don't. Probably don't know Josh Gad.
You might know him as that guy.
Oh, that guy.
He's going to be on a new FX series with Billy Crystal called The Comedians.
He was on a really bad short-lived NBC series.
1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
It was awful.
Yes, it was. I turned that off halfway through the first episode.
Oh, you made it farther than I did.
Second commercial break, yeah.
Yes. So he.
But I like him.
They're both likable. I like Kevin Hart. I like Josh Gad.
Mm-hmm.
The movie's not. That's the problem.
Uh-oh.
The movie's not likable. It's a comedy, they tell us. And it's, again, anytime you have to put that sort of warning out there, it's not a good sign.
Okay, what's the plot?
The plot is Josh Gad somehow tricks his longtime sweetheart, played by Kaley Cuoco.
From TV's Big Bang Theory.
Yes, and she has a second name. I don't know.
Looks better with long hair, by the way.
Okay.
On the on the show, she has short hair.
Does she have
short hair in the movie, too?
No.
Hmm.
No. She's blonde again. Yeah.
Okay.
So, he tricks her into marrying him.
Always the basis of a good, long-lasting, loving relationship, tricking the person into marrying
you. Well, it's not like trick, but he definitely, like, he gets one over on her because why would she be marrying this guy?
Right.
He's lonely, doesn't have friends, so he goes to Kevin Hart, who runs a Best Man Inc., that's a company where he will rent himself out as a best man. And Josh Gad walks in and plunks down his money and he says, give me the works. I need 7 groomsmen, a best man, and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he buys it from Kevin Hart.
And then does Kevin Hart teach him the ways of love and how to really get a woman without having to trick her?
No, that would be something.
That would be the movie Hitch with Will Smith, which is what I thought this was going to be a remake of.
Exactly. It feels very much like Hitch or another movie.
Who was the guy that he worked on in that movie?
Kevin James.
Kevin James.
Or it feels like another movie Paul Rudd was in called I Love You Man, where it's the best man. Yeah. It feels like a lot of things. It's just not very funny. The characters are all very two-dimensional. The fact that they went out and spent money to get Kaley Cuoco is going to blow your mind because it could be a blonde cardboard cutout of a woman.
Wow.
And it's not that she's bad. It's that there's that little for the...
It's a bad character, badly written.
Think about a wedding and think about stereotypes. Women have stars in their eyes about a wedding. Oh, women, she's got stars in her eyes about it. Men would much prefer to get drunk and worry about the bachelor party. Guess what? And that's the problem. There are moments when you're like, oh, okay, I chuckled. Or, oh, I can tell this is going to be sort of one of these heartfelt type scenes. And it just all kind of falls short.
Okay. What do you give it on a scale of 10?
3.
Mm.
Not good. I mean, this is January. This is a kind thing.
You know, it's a shame because Kevin Hart is a funny guy. His stand-up is pretty darn funny.
It is.
And, you know, Chris Rock had the same problem when he started starring in movies, some of which he wrote and directed himself. I'm not including Top 5 in this because I thought that was a very funny movie and really a breakthrough for him. And he really found his comedic voice on screen, which he had had on stage for 20 years. Mm-hmm. But Kevin Hart seems to be following that same path, as, by the way, other comedians have done as well. You know, Kevin James, all he's been able to turn into a success is Paul Blart Mall Cop, which has a sequel coming out this year.
There you go.
But if you've ever seen Kevin James do stand-up, and if you haven't seen Kevin James' HBO special from before he did, what was the
King
TV
of
show?
Queens.
King of Queens. Mm-hmm. It's one of the funniest half hours I've ever seen.
It's great. He's very funny.
But on screen, not so much for Kevin James. And I'm afraid that Kevin Hart may be falling into the same trap.
We'll see. He has a chance to redeem himself. And I think about 2.5 months, he has a movie with Will Ferrell coming out called Get Hard. And the basic premise is Will Ferrell is convicted of a white-collar crime. And Kevin Hart either works for or runs an auto detailing place in his, you know, high-rise apartment. And he goes to Will Ferrell goes to him and says, get me hard for prison so I can be tough in there. You know, Kevin Hart has no experience with prison, his character, and that's the joke. It's like he's trying to play. We'll see. I'm not holding out hope.
It seems to me like Kevin Hart has fallen into a little bit of a bad trend here, which is only going to movies where you have to fix the white guy's problems.
Yeah, It's not
the lame white guy's problems.
So that's Get Hard coming out in a couple months. So we'll see how that
These
plays
guys
out.
Really need to go back and review the earliest movies of a Mr. Edward Murphy.
Yes.
Because there's a guy who was able to turn stand-up comedy into sketch comedy on SNL and then huge success on the big screen.
Yes.
By not doing stupid stuff like this. You can go back now and watch 48 Hours or Trading Places.
Yes.
And laugh.
Coming to America.
Yeah.
Any of his. Beverly Hills Cop, I think, is still funny.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, those all hold up.
Now, it's funny because after Eddie Murphy made some great movies for about 10 years, then he fell off the map and fell into the trap of making garbage like this.
Yeah. So it's a shame. And perhaps what's a big... There's not a lot of comedy options out right now. This is going to have a big weekend.
Yeah?
This is going to have a big...
Going to be the big opener this weekend, you think?
We're going to talk about the other one that I think could be the number one movie.
All right,
and that's American Sniper.
Yes.
And we both saw this. We all three, in fact, saw this. Josh was with me at the movie.
Mm-hmm.
We had a nice date night.
And, all right, fine.
Yeah.
Let's get to the movie.
So American Sniper is the adaptation of a memoir by the deadliest sniper in American history, Navy SEAL Chris Kyle.
160 officially confirmed kills in Iraq, 255 unofficial.
Yes. And yes, I mean, the deadliest sniper, it's directed by Clint Eastwood. Mm-hmm. The title role is played by Bradley Cooper.
Mm-hmm. Both Bradley Cooper and the movie nominated for Oscars.
Yes. And this movie begins, if you've seen the trailer, it begins with a very tense situation. And, you know, Chris Kyle in a situation looking down his sniper scope, having to decide if he's seeing something bad or good and having to make a life or death decision. And I'm just going to use this term now because I'll come back to it later. He's doing something called overwatch, which is looking out through his sniper scope from a perch and trying to find bad threats. There are threats out there.
As the Marines are moving
through. As the Marines move forward.
Fallujah or Ramadi or wherever it was in Iraq.
Yes. So that's what he's supposed to be performing.
Mm-hmm.
The movie through a series of, it's sort of chronological, kind of flashback and go through the story. It tells the story of him deciding to become a Navy SEAL, then a sniper, and meeting his wife and them having kids and his four tours of duty.
Mm-hmm. Going back even when his wife didn't want him to go back.
Yes.
I need you at home. Well, I have to be there because I have to serve my country and I have to protect these guys.
Yeah. Coming back home. We're not spoiling anything by telling you how this plays out. That's it. It takes his story from essentially young childhood through his death because mm-hmm. he was killed by someone he was trying to help. When he came home, he struggled with PTSD.
Seriously.
Serious PTSD, and actually ended up going back and working with other vets of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars and taking them to shooting ranges, doing things like this to get them to work through some of their issues, acclimating themselves to civilian life again, and was actually killed by mm-hmm. one of these people he helped.
Right.
So that's the story.
Now, what do you think of the movie?
I think Clint Eastwood fell down on the job hugely here.
Really?
I think he fell down hugely. And my issue is, this movie, if you should take something from the story of Chris Kyle, not this movie, it's that people can be more than one thing. This man is the deadliest sniper in U.S. history. He is a warrior. He is, you know.
He's a killing machine is what he is.
He is.
He's good at that one thing.
But he's simultaneously listening to his wife, a loving husband, a caring father, a friend to, he's multiple things. This movie fails to capture that time and time again. It is the story of him killing people, these short scenes where he's having stressful times and running back. And you don't feel this sense that he truly is these two characters. You feel that he's an unstoppable killing machine and everything else gets in the way. But when you listen in real life to what his wife has had to say about him, that doesn't match up.
Well, I got to jump in here because he was in Iraq for 1,000 days.
Yes.
And it's hard to compress 1,000 days into a 2-hour and 10-minute movie, particularly when you have the prologue of his early days as a kid and growing up and becoming a rodeo guy and then moving on into the military. You got to include that part of the story. And then there's the back end with the working with the PTSD that you talked about. I actually think some of the scenes on the home front are really good. And the reason I think they're really good is not just because of Cooper, but because of Sienna Miller.
Yes.
And I'm not just saying this because she's my co-star in the new movie Mississippi Grind that's debuting this month at Sundance. And by co-star, I mean I'm in 5 seconds. She's in the rest of the movie. She's fantastic as the wife in this movie. I mean, so impressive in that role that could very easily have come off as cheap and cliched, as you were talking about in the other movie you discussed. It could very easily have just been a whining wife. I don't want you to go back to war. I don't want you to go back to war. But it's not written that way, and her performance keeps it from falling into that cliché ditch. And I thought it was stunning good work. And I also thought Bradley Cooper was really, really good as this character. The only questions I have about it is, what about the other parts of the Chris Kyle story that are also out there, which have led to some controversy about this movie, which is that, you know, we talk about him being a deadly killing machine. Well, there are parts of the story and accusations against him, and a lot of those kills were not killing the enemy, but killing innocent people in Iraq. And, you know, he referred to everyone over there, not just Al-Qaeda, as savages. And things that he wrote in his autobiography don't get portrayed in this movie in that way. I don't think that distracts from the movie.
No, if you know that going in, it's going to be, you'll sort of talk about it at the end. You're not going to be waiting for it to happen. But I like movies that portray not just complex characters, but complex situations. I think this movie does a poor job of talking about the issues inherent with the war that we've had as a nation about, was this a moral war? Was this a correct war? There's one character who grapples with it, and they deal with it backhandedly, offhandedly, and it's just sort of written off. There were opportunities to make this sort of a deeper film. Instead, I felt it came off just very much as an action film. Look at this guy kill all these people. And again, Josh and I were talking about this. It comes off as sort of a Moby Dick story. Let me get this other guy. There's this one guy. I've got to go after this guy. And you reduce this complex living person to, he's going to kill a lot of people and have some issues at home. And that was from when I saw that trailer, I'm like, wow, this looks like it's really going to make it like a deep sort of, what do you do in war? And it didn't live up to that.
Were you caught up at all in the tension of the combat scenes? Because you're talking about how everything else that's in there didn't quite have enough time and wasn't done all that well. What did you think of the combat scenes themselves?
I thought some of them were good. It wasn't, again, I think this is my thought on Clint Eastwood, is he's shown us in the last year the types of movies he should not direct. He should not direct really fast action movies. I don't think he's got a good eye for how to lay out a scene so you know where you are and where everyone else is. And I don't think he should direct musicals.
Well, we learned that from Jersey Boys. So, that was the big mistake for him. I think that the action sequences in this are very good and very gripping. And there were times when I was on the edge of my seat. You know, there are times where these guys are caught up in situations with that other sniper, the Al-Qaeda sniper, who's featured extensively in the movie, but also from the other guys who are there who are closing in on them at one time or another as they're just trying to clear an area or move through an area. You know, the questions about the morality of the Iraq war and all the rest of that sort of stuff, those are arguments that have been hashed out over and over and over again. I don't think that the movie needed to get into that. I think that all of that is supplemental. I was going to say extraneous, but not. It's supplemental to what goes on in the Chris Kyle story. What we get in this movie is a pretty good example of, A, the job of a sniper. I had a chance to talk to a guy years ago who also wrote a book about his experience, and he was the guy who was the deadliest sniper before Chris Kyle came along. And he talked about the science of it and learning how to do it and you know, how to take into account everything that is involved in it, plus slowing yourself down calmly, breathing, you know, all the sort of stuff that comes into being a not just good but great sniper. And I thought that the movie did a good job of that. And I also kind of liked the way it showed how hard it is for our men and women who serve in combat and have served in harsh combat in Iraq and Afghanistan to come home and deal with a wife, a kid, kids, normal everyday life, a party in the backyard, driving down the street, it's completely different. Because when you've spent 1,000 days in the desert or in these horrible cities in Iraq dealing with the next guy you meet could blow you up, and then you come home and the only thing gets blown up is a balloon for your kid's birthday party. It's very, very weird. And we've talked so much about the mental health issues that have faced our returning veterans. I think he does a good job of touching on that. It's not about that, but I think he made it part of the movie, and I think it's okay in that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of this may have been I wasn't expecting as much of an action movie as you end up getting.
Hmm.
That's, I think, an important distinction. And part of it is the sale of the trailer. The trailer doesn't set up, this is going to be a... The trailer is very much about calming yourself down and having to make these decisions.
Yeah.
We have lots of movies about snipers that are action movies, and I wasn't thinking that Clint Eastwood, he's sort of known for more contemplative work. I wasn't expecting something so action, and I don't want to say high octane because I think that's a bit too much, but it's definitely much more of an action movie than I was anticipating it being.
What do you give it on a scale of 10?
I give it a 6. I wouldn't have named it one of my best pictures of the year.
I wouldn't have either, but I give it a solid 8. Mm-hmm. I liked it. There were parts of it that I mentioned that I didn't like. I thought Bradley Cooper was really good and Sienna Miller was fantastic. And the supporting cast is all very good, although in some ways they end up being interchangeable.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the Navy SEALs who are in this, you go, who's that guy? Oh, is that the guy who is this? No, it's not. It's a different guy.
They were in Zero Dark Thirty. If you looked at the cast, the supporting cast of like SEAL Team 6
yeah.
in Zero Dark Thirty and this, I was honestly looking. I'm like, wait, was he another Navy SEAL?
They look well.
That's the idea.
That's the military look.
Yes, that's the military look. But
exactly.
I think it's the same actor. Yeah. That being said, this is going to do, this is going to have a great opening weekend because it has the Oscar buzz around it, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, it's going to have a really big opening weekend. It'll be fun to see how it does at the Academy Awards.
Okay, what else is opening this weekend?
We've got another movie, a Michael Mann movie, Black Hat, about a hacker having to be called up to combat a terrorist threat.
I'll be honest with you, I had an invitation to go to the screening, as I know you did as well. And I looked at the trailer, which I normally don't do ahead of time, but I didn't know anything about the movie. And all right, I'll watch this 2-minute trailer of it. And after watching the 2 minutes of the trailer, I said, I'm not going.
And that's a shame because Michael Mann, you look back at his early work. I mean, Heat and then even up through Collateral, he's known for sort of these slow burn, thrilling action movies.
I like Michael Mann.
This doesn't appear to be that again.
No, it looks like Chris Hemsworth is a hacker and...
blowing things up?
Yeah, it looks like there are...
A hacker built like Chris Hemsworth. 6 feet, 2 inches tall,
no.
240 pounds of
solid
muscle.
A hacker should look like Josh Gad.
Yes, they should have just flipped the roles. There you go. Because Hemsworth and Cuoco go together, not Hemsworth and Gad.
I'm sure she would say that, yeah.
So the good news is, already I think we're going to start to see increases over last year. I think this is going to be a big rebound year for movies.
Now, what
so.
About Paddington, which also opens this weekend?
I really wanted to go see
it. Is that about the Paddington Bear?
Paddington Bear, yes. A real family. A family finds in the London tube station or train station, young Paddington Bear with his blue
coat. Is it animated?
It's real life with a CGI bear. It worried me for a while because Colin Firth was
initially
signed.
You don't mean it's real life. You mean it's live action.
Sure. Live action. It's
Paddington, based on a true story of a family that found a bear in a subway.
That came home and, it was great. A great influence on the family. Colin Firth was initially supposed to be the voice
I'm working on my own movie now. It's called Grizzly on the Metrolink, based on a true story.
Yes.
It's just a grizzly that wanted to go to a Cardinals game.
It
got on at the airport, was really upset about having to pay more when you get on at the airport than from the other Metrolink stations, and that's when trouble started. I'm looking for financing now. You look it up on Indiegogo. That's where I'm going to make the money for my new movie, Grizzly on a Metrolink.
That's the family suggestion.
I'm hoping
for this
to get
week.
Samuel L. Jackson to do, I want this MFing Grizzly off this MFing Metrolink. You know what? It sounds funnier than Wedding Ringer.
Yeah, it does.
It does.
Yeah. So, it's going to be a good family movie.
Okay.
Go see it. I really wanted to see it, but my daughter was sick, and I love taking my daughter to movies like this to get see how like a
Is she old
kid.
Enough to enjoy the experience of seeing big things on a screen bigger than what you have in your house?
Yeah, she flips out. She she bounces.
How old is she now? Three?
She's three and change.
Yeah.
And so I don't know that she could follow a movie like this, but just going, she kept pointing at the previews and say, let's go watch it on the big screen, mm-hmm. the big screen. And I'm like, okay,
nice.
Let's see what we can do. And then she was sick. So I missed out on it, but this is a really good family option, and it's getting pretty reasonable reviews so far.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back and talk about the Oscar nominations from yesterday and some other showbiz stuff as the Large Morning Show in the afternoon continues here on the Big 550 KTRS. Last time I checked in with you, Tim, we had a major problem on, what was it?
Southbound 170.
Yeah,
that's been cleared, and everything looks much, much better now. I mean, it's still running slow in areas, but it's at least moving now. Southbound 170 between Olive down through Highway 40. But now you have some stop-and-go stretches on westbound 70 between Union and Lucas and Hunt. And then again, as you go from 170 past the airport, southbound 270, the same thing. Slow from Dorset down through Ladue. You're heavy again from 40 down through Doherty Ferry. Southbound Telegraph, you are running slow now from 255 to about Jaeger. On southbound 55, a little slow stretch as you go around the bend from Arsenal through Gasconade. Eastbound 40 downtown, you're jamming up now from Union Station to the Poplar Street Bridge. And this report is brought to you by Subway, introducing the new Simple 6 menu at Subway. It starts with six of their best 6-inch sandwiches, now in made-just-for-you meals for just $6 each. All day, every day. Subway, eat fresh. From the Golden Oak Lending Traffic Center, Tim Weiland on the Big 550 KTRS.
Introducing the new Simple 6 menu at Subway. It starts with six of their best 6-inch sandwiches, now in made just for you meals for just $6 each. Subway, eat fresh.
Are broken eyeglasses keeping you from seeing the action? Spectrum Eyeglass Repair has been the leader in eyeglass repair for over a decade. We can fix that expensive pair of sunglasses you thought were doomed to the glove box forever. Spectrum Eyeglass Repair carries the largest selection of pre-made polarized clip-on sunglasses and has the ability to make custom fitted clip-ons for almost any eyeglass frame. We have two area locations, Crestwood and St. Peter's. Check us out in the Yellow Pages under Optical Repair or on the web at SpectrumEyeglassRepair.com.
For over 30 years, Stefaninas has been serving delicious original family recipes brought from Sicily to America by founder Stefanina herself. Outstanding food, large portions, low prices, and great service in a family atmosphere has made Stefaninas one of the area's finest Italian restaurants. With four locations in St. Charles County and one in Chesterfield, Stefaninas is a place to go for everything from pizza and pasta to steak and seafood dinners that the entire family can enjoy. And now you can save even more with their daily specials. Call ahead or order online at steffspizza.com or dine in. But don't miss these savings.
Hey, pizza lovers, it's Friday. That means you can enjoy two large, two-topping pizzas for only $22.95 at Stefaninas. Call your local Stefaninas or Stefaninas Express location or order online at steffspizza.com. Two large, two-topping pizzas for only $22.95, just in time for the weekend at Stefaninas.
Investments are important for every family. One of the safest and most secure investments you can make is the remodeling of your kitchen or bath. A new updated kitchen or bath will increase the value of your home and your lifestyle. Callier & Thompson Kitchens, Baths & Appliances has been in business for over 60 years and will provide experience and quality with a proven track record you can count on. They will guide you through the entire process and work to stay within your budget. Your home is unique and should reflect you. Callier & Thompson designers are not only trained in the art of design, but also in the art of listening, allowing them to interpret each customer's ideas and bring them to life. Visit them today at CallierandThompson.com or call them at 636-391-9099.
While I was getting educated at Washington U, I met a young redhead who said her family had bought a Byerly trailer. It turned out to be one of Walter Byerly's originals built in 1954. For 20 years, the family had traveled through 47 states. I had a 1951 Studebaker. What a perfect match. Eventually, my Studebaker and the old Byerly were hitched up, and we set out on a three-week adventure through the western states. But that's another story. And by the way, the trailer and the Studebaker weren't the only ones that got hitched. I married that redhead, and we've been fellow travelers for over 30 years. It all started in a Byerly RV. Why not see what you can get started in an RV from Byerly in Eureka?
For the rest of your life.
Byerly Trailer.
For the rest of your life.
Byerly Trailer.
Rediscover your family. Show them you care
for the rest of your life. You gotta be there.
Byerly, just 15 minutes west of I-270 on I-44 in Eureka.
Hi, it's Frank. I've been doing this for about 30 years, and I would say that I have worked with, sometimes short-term, sometimes longer-term, but I've probably worked with easily 8 or 10 car dealers. And out of the 8 or 10, two were far and away harder workers and put in more hours and were more dedicated than any of the other dealers. One of those two is retired. The other is Johnny Londoff. Yes, he duck hunts, okay? But I don't know too many people who put as much time and effort and hard work into a business as he does, Johnny Londoff Chevrolet. And when he says he wants to meet as many of his customers as he can, he means it. If you're there and you do business there and he's not around, on the slight chance, and it's not often, that he's not there and you go, oh, man, I wish John Londoff had been there. You give him your name and number. He'll call you. He will meet you. As he says, he's always talking about people wanting to shake his hand. He wants to shake your hand. And if he wants to hug you, let him give you a hug, for goodness sakes. This is a place that just gave you the best car buying experience probably that you've ever had. They've been doing this a long time. And you can buy Chevrolets a lot of places, but there's a reason that so many people will drive past a half dozen other dealerships, drive dozens of miles to do business with Johnny Londoff. And you're going to see what that reason is if you'll just give them a shot at your business, and I hope you will. Johnny Londoff Chevrolet, Washington Elizabeth exit off 270, or any time of the day or night at Londoff.com.
This is the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the Afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris, talking with Colin Jeffrey about movies and showbiz. A quick plug here for the movie Selma, which is playing in theaters all over town and which I think was a terrific movie. Had problems with the LBJ angle on the movie, but the rest of it, including the performance by David Oyelowo as Dr. Martin Luther King, just phenomenal. And with the King holiday on Monday, there are four theaters in the St. Louis area that are offering free admission for kids in 7th, 8th, or 9th grades. You just show your student ID or your report card or something that proves that you're a 7th, 8th, or 9th grader, and you can get in for free to see Selma at the O'Fallon 15, that's a Werenberg theater, the Creve-Coeur 12, that's an AMC theater, the St. Louis Stadium 18, that's a Regal Theater, and the Moolah Theater and Lounge, that's a Moolah Theater. At those four theaters this weekend, you can get in for free to see Selma.
If
you're in 7th, 8th, or 9th grade.
And you have an ID.
And they also have a deal for...
Don't walk to the theater, though.
they also have a deal for people who want to take groups of 25 or more. You can go to the website selmamovie.com/student-tickets, and they'll do that. That's a movie that I think a lot of people should see, particularly those who don't know that part of our history. Now, Selma is nominated for Best Picture at the Academy Awards, along with American Sniper, Birdman, Boyhood, Grand Budapest Hotel, The Imitation Game, Theory of Everything, and Whiplash. They have room for 10 movies in there, but there are only 8. Were there others that you thought should be in that list?
I really thought Nightcrawler should have been in that list, just because I think it's been a long time since we've seen sort of a convincing kind of thriller slash, I don't want to call it a horror movie, but kind of that thriller character,
yeah,
where there was a good actor. I think you've got to go all the way back to Anthony Hopkins in Silence of the Lambs. I'm not saying this is as good as that, But I'm saying I think things should be recognized like that. And I'm one of the people who thinks that Lego Movie should have not just been nominated for animated.
But, which it wasn't.
But best movie of the year. I thought that was... I think you need to make places in these films for family films that engage families. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's just my thought. So those are the two I would have picked up.
How about Gone Girl, which for me was the best movie of the year?
Yeah, I've seen that since I think we spoke. And I like it. I thought it was really good. It just doesn't make my top 10 necessarily, but I never saw Whiplash. You rave about it,
yeah,
so
I do.
Trust you.
I this is one of the rare years where I've actually seen every movie that's nominated for Best Picture. And
let me guess.
And they're all good movies, by the way. I don't have any problem with any of those movies being on that list. They're all good movies. But how could you not make room for Gone Girl? I don't understand it. Or, you know, you can make the case for the Lego Movie, as you just did.
But Grand Budapest Hotel, I'm pulling for. I'm pulling for
but
it.
But what do you think will win?
Oh, I think Boyhood wins. I think that ends up winning. It's one of these things everyone's going to look at it that votes in the Academy. It's not people. It's not popular. It's not box office.
Not the People's Choice Awards.
They're going to say, wow, we've all been in this industry a long time and have never seen anything like this. I agree with this. That's what I was talking about it earlier. That's how you explain movies like The Artist, which wasn't necessarily a bad movie. I just don't know that it was the best.
Yeah, that was a ridiculous choice.
But it won because of that, and I think this wins in large part because of that.
And if you don't know what Colin's talking about, this is a movie that Richard Linklater, who, by the way, made the most romantic movie ever called Before Sunrise, which I've raved about many, many times. I think it was 20 years ago now. But yeah, I think it's the 20th anniversary of Before Sunrise. But he's made other things as well. He made this movie over the course of 12 years with the same actors. The reason he did it over 12 years is not because he didn't have the money for it each year. It's because he wanted to show a family growing up and the actors growing up without having to put him in, you know, fake makeup and put powder in his hair to make him look like an older guy or that sort of stuff. So it's the story of a kid growing from 6 to 18 and his parents who get divorced along the way and the mistakes the mom makes in new partners after she leaves mm-hmm. Ethan Hawke and what happens in Ethan Hawke's life. And it's not just the boy, but also his sister, who's mm-hmm. played by Richard Linklater's daughter, Lorelai.
It was a tough contract negotiation.
Yeah. He was the one that he was 100% sure would be there for all 12 years. interesting thing about this movie is there's no such thing as a 12-year personal service contract. In the United States of America, the longest you can sign somebody to a contract for is 7 years, which is, by the way, what happens on sitcoms. You know, the cast of Big Bang Theory or Cheers or CSI, any of those shows, when they sign a contract, it can't be for more than 7 years. Well, here was a movie that you know was going to take 12 years to make. It wasn't like, we're going to make a little bit of it this year, and then I'll figure out what we're going to do next year. He had plotted out the whole movie over the course of a dozen years and was adding things in as they went. But he had to find parents who were willing to say, yes, my 6-year-old son will continue to come back to make this movie 1 or 2 weeks a year, every year, until he's out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pretty remarkable achievement.
And I think you answered why it wins Best Picture.
You think the Academy looks at that and goes, wow, that's unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, it's such an ambitious project that I guess you have to reward it with that. Again, it wasn't my favorite movie of the year.
Yeah, I know.
But they didn't say favorite.
All right. In the director category, Ava DuVernay was not nominated for Selma. The movie's up for Best Picture, is not nominated. I facetiously said yesterday, how can it be nominated for Best Picture, but you don't nominate the woman who made it? Well, the answer is there are 8 nominees for Best Picture and 5 for Best Director. Mm-hmm. 3 people are going to be left off the list. However, and there is always a however in life, I think that a couple of the people who are on the director's list don't deserve to be there, including Bennett Miller, who made the incredibly boring Foxcatcher.
Okay. I still haven't seen it.
You could easily have put... And by the way, Ava DuVernay's accomplishment with Selma is remarkable. She mm-hmm. tells a grand story and does it well and got terrific performances out of the actors and really, really worth seeing. The other nominees in that category are Alejandro Iñárritu, who did Birdman, Richard Linklater for Boyhood, Grand Budapest Hotel's Wes Anderson, and Morten Tilden for The Imitation Game. Good movie. Not great directing, though.
No. Well, that's the thing. Everyone's talking about Ava not getting nominated for this. She's probably getting more press. And let's be honest, it doesn't matter. This is a two-horse race. And, I mean, no one's winning it if it's not Linklater or Iñárritu. I don't see any way anyone else wins this.
I agree.
Because one of those two is going to walk away from it. If you haven't seen Birdman, you know, I mean, it may not be the most accessible story, but when you watch it, it's got such a unique feel to the way it's directed. It looks like one long shot.
Yep.
It's not. Now, that being said, I think that sort of points to, I think the Academy may like Linklater more because the rest of the supporting group behind Birdman, the people who would do editing and visual effects, didn't get nominated.
Mm.
And they had to stitch together these scenes to make it look as if it was in one. So I think that might be the issue. Now,
so do you think then Michael Keaton doesn't win for Best Actor?
I don't think he does.
He just got the Golden Globe. He just got the Critics' Choice. By the way, I didn't see the Critics' Choice Awards last night, but a friend of mine, because I was out last night, but a friend of mine emailed me and he said, I'm watching the worst award show ever televised. Josh, did you see any of it last night? But you've heard the same thing from other people?
No, I just over the years.
Apparently it was hosted by Michael Strahan.
Why? Why? Why?
He's a popular television host, people.
He has nothing to do with the movies.
No, he's not.
Now, are you part of the critics group that chooses the Critics' Choice Awards?
No, I wish.
No.
No, but no, I would never. Yeah.
It's just yet another award show, but my friend said it was horrible.
Oh, I'm sure it was. And yeah, I don't understand it. Actor in a leading role, I still think. I think Redmayne wins it.
Eddie Redmayne for playing Stephen Hawking in The Theory of Everything.
Now, Bradley Cooper, this will be his, I believe, third consecutive nomination.
That's correct.
That's going to be tough. I mean, eventually the Academy just seems to say, okay, finally. They do it sort of as a body of work.
This year, the body of work, okay, eventually thing is going to be for Julianne Moore in the Best Actress category.
Still Alice.
For Still Alice, which hasn't opened here in St. Louis. I haven't seen it. Have you?
No, but this is, again, this is the movie that everyone is saying is one of her best performances.
Yeah.
Just so you know what that's about when it comes out, for those of you listening, Still Alice, Julianne Moore plays a linguist who one day realizes she's forgetting words and...
It's early onset Alzheimer's.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so that's what she plays.
With Alec Baldwin as her husband.
I've heard of him.
If there's one lock in the Academy Award nominations that were announced yesterday, it has to be J.K. Simmons for Best Supporting Actor in Whiplash. I don't know why he's technically supporting actor because he and Miles Teller are on screen for almost the same amount of time. But I guess when you're going for an Academy Award, you say, what category do I have a chance of winning? He is up against Mark Ruffalo in Foxcatcher, not going to win. Robert Duvall in The Judge, not going to win. Ethan Hawke in Boyhood, not going to win. And Edward Norton in Birdman, who has one fantastically explosive scene with Michael Keaton and is just so good at popping off the screen, he has a shot at it. But I don't think he can catch J.K.
Simmons. He's not going to, but there should be a special award for times like... Can there be co-winners? I want co-winners. Like, that's...
There have been ties.
Yeah. Everyone should have to watch that little, like, 2.5 minute, 3 minute
scene. Every acting class ever given, before you do anything, here's what you should do. Show that and say, here's how good you'll never be.
Yes.
But here's what you should strive for.
Oh, man, it's so good.
That one scene.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And then, you know, we've got all the other categories. Animated feature we talked about. I think I saw probably more of these than you did.
I didn't see any of them.
Big Hero 6.
What's going to win?
How to Train Your Dragon 2. It's
really?
A safe choice. And it's good. I mean, if you saw the first How to Train Your Dragon, it was good. You liked it. It was designed for, I'm going to say, a slightly younger audience. This one sort of grew up and dealt with slightly more complex issue at the core of it.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. My two favorite, though, were the Lego movie and a movie that no one saw, The Book of Life. I really liked both of those.
Mm.
And neither of those. So How to Train Your Dragon's going to win. But it's a shame to not see the Lego movie get nominated.
I mentioned yesterday when I was talking to Mike Evans that none of the movies that are nominated for Best Picture made $60 million or more.
Wow.
The Grand Budapest Hotel was the highest ranking on the box office scale, and it made $59 million.
Wow.
So where are all the big blockbuster movies? They're in the visual effects and other categories. Just look at achievement in visual effects. Captain America, The Winter Soldier, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Guardians of the Galaxy, Interstellar, X-Men, Days of Future Past. Those five movies, any one of them made more than all of the Best Picture nominees combined.
Wow. Yeah.
Isn't that unbelievable?
They find, yeah. Wow.
That's where those go.
So there you go.
Okay. Anything else we have to talk about showbiz-wise? Oh, I wanted to ask you about this Charlize Theron story. That because of the Sony hack, she found out that she wasn't making as much as Chris Hemsworth in The Huntsman, that he was getting like $10 million more than her. And she found out about it because of the Sony hack, and so she went back to Sony and she said, we're going to change this now, aren't we? And they did. They gave her the $10 million increase.
Yeah. Hey.
That's pretty
more
cool.
More power to her, yeah.
If you were that easy in our business, we'd all be getting raises.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's something else. But I don't know. I think the Academy Awards got it mostly right.
One thing I do want to mention, and this is credit to Joe Williams, the film critic for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, about Selma, mm-hmm. which I thought I was done with, but I want to get this one last thing in. People have been saying that the fact that Ava DuVernay, the director, and David Oyelowo, the star, didn't get nominated, even though the movie is up for Best Picture. And the fact that all of the acting nominees are white people are saying, well, this is proof that the Academy Awards are racist. And Joe Williams tweeted yesterday, oh, they are? Since 2000, Academy Awards have gone to Denzel Washington, Halle Berry, Octavia Spencer, Lupita Nyong'o, director Steve McQueen, John Ridley, and the movie 12 Years a Slave.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they don't recognize good work by African Americans.
It's just a year, you know?
It's the way it went.
Yes.
All right. Thanks, Colin.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you. Get back to the newsroom. Get me some headlines for the
top of the
hour.
So I've got a question for you real quick.
Yes, go ahead.
You were talking about that one movie, I can't remember, but you said it's not released yet in St. Louis.
Still Alice.
Yeah. Why? If it's out everywhere else,
These movies aren't out everywhere else. Here's what happens. They release them in some theaters in some cities, particularly in Los Angeles and New York.
Okay.
If it shows on screens there, I think for a week in December, then that fits into the Academy Award qualifying year. And so they'll do that even for movies that aren't coming out for us until January. I mean, look, Selma opened last weekend. American Sniper opened today here and across most of the country. Still Alice, I think, is in a week or two. They do that all the time, that movies get pushed off. It's odd because January used to be the dumping ground for bad movies. But it also is the place where movies that wanted to be in the Academy Award race, they get exposure in the cities just enough to be qualified in December, but we don't get to see them until January.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Good question, though. It's 4:55 at the Big 550 KTRS.
Meet me.
Now let's see what the roads are like, Tim.
Well, westbound 40, okay, we'll give you the usual slowdown, Kings Highway through McCausland. You're a little bit heavy Timberlake Manor to Mason, but boy, you are jammed pretty well. I don't know if it's because of the sunset or just people just trying to get out of town, but you're jammed up from about Winghaven all the way out through Wentzville. On westbound 70, you've got that slowdown right at Jennings Station, bit heavy between 170 out through the airport. Eastbound 270 jamming up Missouri Bottom through New Florissant. You're going to be a little bit heavy from the Halls Ferries through 367. They had road work going on northbound Lindbergh, and it was slow between Highway 270 up through Washington. Then we have southbound 270, one stop at Go Pocket right between Page and Olive, a little bit slow in areas all the way down through Doherty Ferry. Then we have westbound 44. Things are jamming up now from the Merrimack River Bridge out through 141 and eastbound 40 downtown Jefferson to the Poplar Street Bridge. This report brought to you by Subway. Introducing the new Simple 6 menu at Subway. It starts with six of their best 6-inch sandwiches, now in made just for you meals for just $6 each. All day, every day. Subway, eat fresh. From the Golden Oak Lending Traffic Center, Tim Weiland on the Big 550 KTRS.
Since I've been doing commercials for R&R Sanitation Porta Potties, my name and my likeness has become synonymous with R&R Sanitation Porta Potties. And so every time people go to an event and go to a festival or they're out and about and they use the R&R Sanitation Porta Potty, they usually send me a picture and say, hey, I've been thinking about you. Which is good, because R&R Sanitation is all about customer service, all about quality, and all about cleanliness. They also say, hey, I walked into an R&R Sanitation porta potty and I couldn't believe how clean it was. That's right, R&R Sanitation is setting the standard for the industry. They're locally owned and operated and the only union toilet company on the Missouri side of the river. And if you need a porta potty for your next party, for your next festival, for your next event, for your next construction project, R&R Sanitation porta potties, 314-776-4000. That's 314-776-4000 or rnrportabletoilets.com. They really do want your stinking business, R&R Sanitation.
Hey, Linda. Have you been working out?
I've been shopping at Rite Aid.
Huh?
Yeah, it's Happy You Year at Rite Aid. You can earn all these great rewards just by shopping. I got dance fitness sessions.
Rewards for shopping. Happy Me Year.
It's Happy You Year at Rite Aid. Earn rewards from bowling to exercise classes to vacations for every $50 you spend on participating products with your Wellness Plus card. Now through January 24th. Certain restrictions apply. Value and types of rewards will vary. See RiteAid.com/YouYear for details.
Broadway Ford Truck Sales has the all-new 2015 F-150, the toughest, smartest, and most capable F-150 ever. Give us a call at 314-241-9140 or online at BroadwayTruck.com.
Win a $50,000 cash grand prize or a share of thousands in free slot play during the Winter Wonderland giveaway, Fridays and Saturdays in January at Hollywood Casino.
4:58 at the Big 550 KTRS. I guess Bill Cleveland's on assignment today. Won't be joining us. But in the next hour, we'll, of course, have the Harris Challenge, which means you have 17 minutes to study up on what happened this week. So you're ready to answer the category, have you been paying attention? And Mike Evans and Knuckleheads in the News, all in the next hour here on the Big 550. One quick note here about the meeting that was held yesterday here in St. Louis between Eric Grubman, who's an executive vice president for the National Football League, and people who are trying to keep the Rams here in town. I did not like the fact that he said, essentially, yes, Stan Kroenke is looking elsewhere, but if St. Louis wants to keep the Rams, a new stadium will be necessary. In other words, it's incumbent upon our city to commit to building a stadium before we know if the team that is already ours is going to continue to be ours. Shouldn't it work the other way?
Yeah.
Stan Kroenke gives us a guarantee. I'm going to keep the Rams in town if you build me a new stadium. Not, go ahead and build me a new stadium, then I'll see what I want to do. Maybe I want to go to L.A.
Yeah. He's miserable.
And by the way, when the NFL comes forth and makes a statement about anything like this, got to keep in mind that the guy who's talking, an executive vice president for the NFL, he works for the billionaire owners.
Right.
He doesn't work for the fans. He doesn't work for the taxpayers of St. Louis. He's not involved in making sure that your pocket and mine have enough money in them. He wants